I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I'm old now, you know, I'm just hanging on. But I look all right.
Yeah, you look great.
I pick up a lot of young ladies, a lot younger than me, I pick up at the bar. Not to take home, I mean, you know, old age caught up to me.
Were you ever married?
I was engaged one time. We got close to marriage. And all of a sudden, she came up with all these horses. She was always one to be in her own business and have her own thing. And she didn't want to get tied up with a family or nothing. And next thing you know, she had trotters, racehorses.
Oh.
And her name was Pam. And me and Pam made a perfect couple.
Yeah.
But she liked to party like me. And I figured me and her were going to get married. And one thing led to another. And next thing you know, she's got racehorses. She's got trotters. She had a way of drugging them and different schemes. But that's how she was. And finally, she robbed me one night out of quite a bit of money. And that sort of ended our relationship. I don't know what it was with her, but she was a big money girl. I couldn't afford her. That night I hit at the track for over $800. I gave her $200. Took her out to dinner, and whether I got drugged or what, I passed out. And I woke up in the morning, I couldn't buy a cup of coffee. I was broke. She was gone. I didn't know where she went. I kind of got my act together, you know, and went back to work. That's when I opened a flower shop, so it kind of hurt me to be out that kind of money. But, I mean, we're still friends, and I've been told to go back with her. They say, oh, you make the perfect couple, you two, and go back with Pam and all this. And I just can't bring myself to do that. I'm just thankful I'm still alive. I'm still able to work.
From CBC, this is Love Me, a show about the messiness of human connection. I'm Lou. Today's episode, Capsized.
The waves are going on every second, 24 hours every day. They're always pounding, washing over the beach, and you get this constant gush of water. That's always in the background. As you talk, as you sleep, as you eat, as you do everything in your life, there is always that sound of the sea. You may hear the sound of the bell when it's time to go to church. Maybe the doctor barking and maybe some children playing. Maybe the rush of the wind in the trees. But always the constant pounding of the waves. My name is Anote Tsong. I was the former president of the Republic of Kiribati. Kiribati is a group of very small islands right in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Kiribati is virtually in the center of the world because it's on both hemispheres and on both sides of the international dateline of the Central Pacific Ocean. I think it is the most beautiful place on this planet. It's small strips of land with mostly covered in coconut trees and pure white beaches. The land itself is very low-lying islands. On average, I think, not much above 2 meters above sea level. And hence our deep concern with what is happening at the moment. Without sea, we could not survive because much of our source of food is actually provided by the sea. But life is changing. Anybody who says you can see the sea rising is lying. But you can see that where there used to be land and now it's all gone, you can see that. Where there used to be trees and they're all falling into the sea, you can see that. Some years ago, the sea would have been maybe 100 meters away. Now there is no longer that buffer. The sea has actually gone, broken in. The island, you know, it won't disappear overnight. But given the scenario of events, given the predictions of the science, progressively the islands and the villages will become uninhabitable because much of it will be underwater. It's inevitable. And the question is, how soon? Even at this time, there, we have a lot of people who deny it and deny climate change, which is a dangerous thing to do because it renders you unprepared for what is coming. You never want to think and believe that your home where you've lived all of your life will no longer be there. I mean, I have a lot of grandchildren and I watch them playing and I wonder, you know, what's going to happen to these young people. Yet at this moment in time, I cannot promise my grandchildren that their future is assured. Where will they be in 20 years' time? What would their life be? That is unbearable to think about. And the fact that we know what causes climate change and the fact that we continue to do the things that cause it, what does that make us? And everybody is so concerned about the polar bear, but nobody's concerned about people like us in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, also losing their home. But I think until you can feel personally threatened, they will not mean a great deal to you. It takes people who can see beyond themselves, to care beyond themselves, to be able to hear and to do something about it.
Obod by Phil Smith. Outside, they're tying ropes. Shouts ricochet, like the calls from birds in different trees. Organs rumble. It dawns on you the ship has chosen not to sink again. And Breath's engines, having seen you safely through to the wordless shores of a land before the radio starts to speak, will carry on regardless now as questions disembark. Have two people ever met on equal terms? Asks the jetty. Can there be a pair of islands? Do apologies exist? Or is there always an attempt to say, that wasn't me, I promise? What's the word for the space between our pillows? Is it a day? Is it love? Waking face to face, your love is at the porthole. Your lover is a porthole mouthing. Come find out.
The very first time that George Clooney was appointed People magazine's sexiest man alive, he was 36 years old, which is the same age that I am now. The magazine article said, although he's a bachelor with eyes full of mystic and magic and a sly smile signifying trouble, everyone is taking bets on when he'll settle down. I have a $10,000 bet with him that he'll have a kid in the next 5 years. Kirsten Dunst, then 15, is quoted as saying. It was actually another 20 years before George met the love of his life, Amal, and they had their twins. I would also like 20 years to figure things out. But I'm guessing George wasn't getting ads in his Facebook feed for freezing his eggs. So I go on a lot of dates. First dates, anyway. They usually go something like this. We go out for a drink, discuss his work and my work, how many siblings he has, usually between 1 and 3, and how many siblings I have. None, but yes, I've always wished I had a brother or sister. Then we go over if he likes mushrooms or cilantro. I like them both. And at some point, he says something like, has the Me Too movement gone too far? And that's when I go home and make noodles and take a bath. Repeat. But then I meet someone who suggests something different. His name is Carl. His online profile says he's an architect. After a few messages back and forth about books and dogs and friends of friends we have in common, he asks me a question I've never been asked before. Have you ever been to a meeting of the Chicago Area Ornamental Shrimp Society? The next Saturday, Carl comes to pick me up. After an awkward half-handshake, half-hug, we get in the car and I ask him the question that's been eating at me all week. What is an ornamental shrimp, exactly? The ones you keep in an aquarium is the short answer. Carl says he used to have a colony of red cherry shrimp that died a couple of years ago, and he's trying to bring his aquarium back.
Hi. We wanted to go to the Shrimp Society.
Second from last there.
Thank you.
The Chicago Area Ornamental Shrimp Society meeting is held in a conference room of a library way out in the suburbs. When we arrive, the room is already packed. We go around the room and introduce ourselves. Names, favorite species, why we're here today.
I had a colony of red shrimp.
It's a lot like an AA meeting.
And trying to bring my aquarium back.
I'm Sarah, and I actually don't have my own aquarium, but I'm curious about it, excited to learn about it.
And then the presentation begins. The speaker's name is Varun, and I'm pretty sure he's still in high school. He tells us about breeding dwarf orange crayfish, which are a great option for the beginning breeder. He winks in my direction.
I sort of kept them in their own tank until they
He were says that he kept his male and his female in their own tanks till they were about 6 months old, which, it turned out, was too old, because at that point, the male and the female were the same size.
And because of that, the male was essentially never able to overpower the female.
The male was never able to overpower the female. And they only mated once, and then the female died, and the male lost his arms. I look at my date flirtatiously, but he's paging through a complimentary copy of Freshwater Monthly. After some talk about algae and egg sacs, there's a short break. Carl goes to the bathroom, and I check out the snacks. A man comes up to me and introduces himself as Alan. He tells me that he'd been raising saltwater fish for years. But now, his wife is more interested in freshwater, and he wants to make her happy. He's never been to one of these meetings before, but already, freshwater people seem so much nicer, less competitive. We both turn to look at the shrimp paraphernalia lined up on the table. It looks like they have enough raffle prizes for everyone to leave with something, he says. That's not what it was like at the saltwater meetings. Carl and I meet back up at our seats and the presentation resumes. Varun projects a diagram called crayfish mating. It's a grid with illustrations A through H. In A, the crayfish are just starting to sniff each other. Their tentacles cross. B, the smaller crayfish is in retreat. C, they just begin to wrestle. D, you can't even see the female crayfish underneath that guy. E, it's hard to tell, but maybe they flipped over. F, kind of a 69 situation. G, woman on top. H, it's over. I feel myself blush. Carl doesn't notice because right then, his raffle number gets called. After some deliberation, he settles on a new pH tester. Finally, it's time to learn about Procambrus virginalis, the marbled crayfish. There are only females, and what they do is clone themselves and clone themselves, and then they clone themselves until they're way too crowded, but they just can't stop. Then they cannibalize each other and their young. When the meeting's over, we all get in our cars and head to Varun's parents' house to see the tanks he keeps in the garage. On the way there, Carl compliments me on the aquatic plant I chose in the raffle. Thanks, I say, squishing it in its plastic bag on my lap. Carl and I arrive before Varun does, so his mom and dad let us in. We take off our shoes and admire his dad's collection of model cars. His sister's doing homework on the couch. We always like it when Varun's friends come over, his mom tells us. One of Varun's tanks is completely full with marbled carapaces. I recognize them immediately. Self-cloners. Alan, the saltwater guy, comes over to me and whispers in my ear, "The only way out is to kill them now." Carl drives me home. There's traffic, and we sit mostly in silence, tired from the events of the day. It's about 4 p.m. When we pull up in front of my building, Carl says, "Okay, well, that was fun." And I lean over the gear shifts and give him a tilted little hug. It looks a lot like diagram C. Crayfish, precoitus, all elbow and torso and shell.
On today's episode, you heard Shrimp Date by Sarah Geis. Sarah has not been back to an Ornamental Shrimp Society meeting since her initial date. You can see the crayfish mating chart at our website, cbc.ca/loveme. And at the beginning of the show, you heard George talking about his past love. The interview excerpt was recorded by Jana Graham.
I met the first woman ambassador to Denmark. I took care of her yard when I was going with Pam.
You also heard the poem Obad, written by Phil Smith and performed by Tristan D. Lala.
I looked up the word. Obad means a poem or piece of music written about or influenced by the early morning. Once I understood the definition properly, the whole poem really just lifted off the page. It was so beautiful. I could hear it and smell it. I could smell this poem.
You also heard Anote Tong, former president of the island nation of Kirbitz. Mr. Tong continues to speak out about climate change, hoping to be heard. Today's episode of Love Me was produced and edited by Crystal Duhame, Mira Burt-Wintonik, and Sarah Geis. It was mixed by Mira Burt-Wintonik and Crystal Duhame. Love Me's theme song is by Tim Kingsbury. Additional music by Murray Lightburn. Subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a review. Tune in next week for our last episode of the season. I'm Lou Olkowski. Thanks for listening. Want more CBC podcasts? Try Personal Best, a reckless, do-it-yourself approach to self-improvement. In each episode, they help someone tackle a weird, eccentric, or petty everyday hang-up that you would be too embarrassed to tell an actual life coach about. Have a listen.
So our plan is to have Manu wear a wire and then send him into a bunch of Shoppers Drug Marts.
I'm going to buy Fresca at every Shoppers because I f***ing love Fresca. Is that cool with you?
Let's get this f***ing guy some f***ing Fresca.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.